Welcome to the Leadership Window podcast with Dr. Patrick Jinks. Each week, through a social sector lens, Patrick interviews leaders and experts and puts us in touch with trends and tips for leading effectively. Patrick is a board-certified executive coach, a member of the Forbes Coaches Council, a best-selling author, award-winning photographer, and a professional speaker. And now, here's Dr. Patrick Jinks.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Leadership Window. This is episode 111. 111. All the stars aligning in a straight line, I guess, here is what that supposedly means. So this is going to be a great episode, Anthony. This 111 is a special number, you know. It's like when it's 1111 at... Oh, you're not going to believe this. It's 1111 right this moment as I say this. It's 1111 a.m. Holy moly. Okay, that's weird. So this is really going to be a great episode because, you know, it means the stars are aligning or whatever. Like there's alignment in the air. Very cool. I have Anthony Dix, Dr. Anthony Dix, on the show today. And I don't know why we haven't made this connection before now, but I was fortunate enough to hear Anthony do one of his amazing keynotes at one of our statewide conferences here in my home state of South Carolina, with an organization called SC Thrive. And this is just it. You know, Anthony is just one of those dynamic, charismatic speakers that you just can't tune out. You know, he grabs your attention right off the bat. He's an author. He's a speaker. Anthony is, he is senior leadership consultant. His formal title is he's senior leadership consultant for 180 Management Group, which also used to be based here in South Carolina, but has since moved up north a little bit. And they're based now out of Annapolis, Maryland. Dr. Dix, and I say Dr. Dix, Doctorate of Strategic Leadership from Liberty University. So a man after my own heart. He's a John Maxwell certified team member. He's an executive coach and speaker. His passion for leadership development is seen in everything he touches. Particularly with emerging nonprofit leaders, which is a very important field, given the fact that we've got so much leadership turnover happening right now in the sector and how important it is to prepare the next generation of social sector leaders. So he spent over two decades preparing people with diverse responsibilities to reach their optimal leadership potential. And you're going to hear some of why that's the case and why he's so effective in doing that. And I'm just honored that we've connected and finally got him on this show. Anthony, so great to have this connection. And thank you for reaching out and for carving out some time for us and our listeners today. Welcome to the show.
Patrick, thank you so very much for having me on. It's an honor and a privilege to have this opportunity to converse with you, and hopefully our conversation extends into some areas that really, really benefit those of your listening audience. So thank you. On another note, that, you know, I know it was 11-11 probably about 3 or 4 minutes ago, but my daughter was born on November the 11th,
which is another
11-11.
Oh, this is cool. That's cool. Yeah, that's a great birthday.
Yeah. Also Veterans Day. So yeah.
I didn't know anything about 11-11. My wife's the one that got me onto it several years ago. She would, you know, look at her watch or look at the clock, and if it was 11-11, she would say it. She would go, "Hey, it's 11-11." And for a while I was like, "And?" Like, okay, thank you for the time. You know, I called 411 or something and asked for the time. And then she finally told me, no, it's this thing. It's a big thing. Like the non-crooked numbers, when it's all lined up, the 1111 is supposedly means something. I don't know. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't.
It's my first time hearing that one.
Yeah. But now it's kind of cool. And you know, it's episode 111, started at 1111 for the father of, a girl, a woman who was born on 1111. So. Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She is very much a 23-year-old woman.
23. Yep. Okay. All right. I didn't know. That's awesome. Now you and, by the way, Miriam Dix, many of our listeners will know her as well. Also a very, I would just say, you know, a prolific consultant here, at least throughout the state. I mean, very well known. And I know really around the country too. And, where's the rest of your family? So you mentioned a daughter. Did your whole family move up there, or just you and Miriam right now? Or
The whole family moved up here.
All
My
right.
oldest daughter recently graduated from Claflin University, and she graduated fall of 2023. So that was about a few months ago. My son is a rising senior at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill,
All
where
right.
his mother went to school. And my youngest daughter is at North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University in Greensboro, North Carolina, where I went to school. So their things are here. They aren't physically here, but they didn't make the move with us. Those two are still, they're still in school this semester. And Miriam is here. Devin is here. Kennedy's at A&T, and Trey is at Chapel Hill. So yeah,
man,
everybody made the move.
What a family of scholars. Incredible.
Yeah.
What
As
drew
the
you up?
Once said they get that from their mama.
Okay. Well, okay, Dr. Dix, they're from their mama.
I'm not a doctor yet. Don't get me in no trouble, Patrick. I am in school. I'm
you're in the program.
I
thought you were done. Okay.
Yeah, I'm in the program.
All right.
No, I'm not done quite
well,
yet.
Well, I'm going to call you Dr. Dix by faith. How's that?
I'll accept it by faith. Thank you.
What drew you to Annapolis?
The Lord, really, since we're talking about faith,
yeah.
We felt called to come up this way because of some other things that we were doing to give us access to be a little bit closer to policymakers and other opportunities to serve nonprofits nationally, which is important to us all. And it gave us different travel options with regards to BWI's airport, stuff like that. So those three or four things, however many things I mentioned, that's kind of what influenced it. But the Lord really, really prompted it. Of course, I am a man of faith. Those who know me know that. And we just listened to him. He said Annapolis, and we made the move.
Yeah, man, that is inspiring. We already miss y'all down here in South Carolina. I mean, you really, you and Miriam both have had such a great impact and presence here in the state. I mentioned your consultancy, 180 Management. Tell us more about it. Tell us about the heart of your work. What do you want a mission to do?
We're on a mission to transform organizations, to help them operate better and help leaders to lead them better as well. So that's kind of our mission. Often, this is a little bit about some of my leadership framework. You know, people sometimes can become so mission-minded that they forget that their mission is not just to help people or to facilitate, you know, the initiatives of their organization, but they also work with humans. It's humans doing this work. And when things aren't operating at their peak capacity with regards to efficiency, there are consequences that are intangible because it does affect how people think, how people live, and how people act. And so we have found that in transforming organizations, you can't do it without transforming lives.
Wow.
So at the end of the day, we are into transforming lives for the better through transforming institutions and organizations. So that's the heart of our work. We're just trying to make, as my dad would say, never let it be said and said to your shame that all was well until you came. So we're trying to leave things better than we find them. And that's the gist of our work.
That is such clarity and so inspiring, Anthony. You know, we've talked a good bit with other folks on the show about the people and the importance of the people. You know, many of the listeners right now are, you know, they're running organizations or they're senior leaders in organizations, and it's so institutional. My department, my team, my strength, you know, the org chart, the mission of the organization, as you say. And I'm one of these big believers. You know, you hear companies and organizations say, you know, customer first in this business, right? We put our customer first, or our donors come first, or our clients or our beneficiaries come first. I'm one of these huge believers that the employees actually come first because they're people. And if you put them first, and you treat them like the human, as you say, and you give them a space to flourish, the customers and the donors and the clients and the beneficiaries are all going to be well taken care of if that happens first.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Man,
that's a
love
very
it.
Good point.
Yeah. So that resonates. And what do you find yourself? I'm interested in knowing kind of what are you working on right now? Do you have any particular projects or engagements that are exciting you right now, specifically?
Well, you know, it's funny that you ask. What excites me most is to be a part of someone's process, to watch them transform. And so I've got the opportunity with some coaching clients to watch them evolve and transform as leaders. And you know how it is, Patrick, when you have the opportunity to coach someone individually as a leader, you coach them, you watch them evolve, but you also think about the other opportunities that you've had to do it. And you just reflect on the magic of leadership evolution, just thinking about different clients you've served in different ways and how they may all have some things in common, but then there's some things that are distinct and diverse that add to the beautiful picture of leadership. And so that's pretty exciting. And we're also working on things with some other organizations to help transform those organizations. That's exciting. But the thing that really is awakening me to new possibilities is the building of communities for people in leadership, because so many leaders are lonely and they don't just need coaching. They don't just need consulting. They need a community. And that right there is, listen, that's what gets me up in the morning, being able to provide an opportunity to build community, to facilitate the building of community. That's something on the cutting edge of what we're doing here at 180 Management Group. And I am so excited about that. Now that right there gets it going.
You know what's funny is, and our listeners can't see you, but I can. And your energy, your energy level, like the sound, the visual, and just the energy just jumped up, you know, tenfold when you started talking about that. So those weren't just words. That got me excited. I'm curious to learn more about this though. So you're helping these leaders create communities. You're encouraging tell me about this community building. What does that look like?
So many of the organizations that we serve other people. And so they are built to help build community for others. And I think that we are asking too much of leaders to do that for themselves, right? Leaders are unique persons. They're unique people that, you know, some people might say they're a little quirky. Some might say a little awkward, but we are who we are. And there are some things that are particularly unique to leadership, depending upon at what level you lead, to where it's difficult to make connections with someone who has similar responsibility and authority in their organizations, and to have the requisite safe and sacred environment. And I mean, by sacred, I don't mean religious. By sacred, I mean this is distinct. This is the only purpose for this, right? It is hard to find those environments that create community, particularly for leaders. And what we are seeking to provide at 180 Management Group is those opportunities to construct those safe environments for nonprofit leaders to begin building community. We see ourselves in facilitating it. And of course, you can't facilitate without facility. So you've got to have a structure to do it. And that's kind of where we are right now, building opportunities so that leaders can build community distinctly to help them grow and develop.
Can you give an example of where you're seeing that work and start to come to fruition?
Well, I can't say of a specific example where I've seen that work in the way in which we envision it, because it is, you know, there's some specificity there. You have other environments where there are things like peer advisory groups or Truth at Work. And those things, you know, they may get together and they all have their different frameworks. And this is the difference for what we propose. In many others, community may be an offspring of what they provide. That you come together enough as peers, you come together enough long enough, and then community is the offspring. But from where I sit, community is the end. It is not the means. It is the end to help combat significant challenges that leaders have, particularly in my opinion, with regards to isolation, anxiety, and loneliness. Too many leaders feel like they're in it by themselves, and they don't have safe places to develop certain types of peer relationships. And we want to provide them with that opportunity. And that's kind of the difference, but also other places. I think I can't remember some of the other names of certain peer advisory groups, but this is not a mastermind. It wouldn't just be a peer advisory group like others. It would be distinctly built to help build community so that I think it was Simon. It might've been Simon Sinek in his book, Leaders Eat Last, talking about the different types of chemicals that go off in the brain, the oxytocin, the serotonin, and dopamine. And one of them is the community building chemical, the chemical that comes from being in community. And I can't remember, I think it was oxytocin. I can't remember which one it was, but either way, I'm not a chemist or scientist or a physician, but I do know that there are benefits for the brain, the heart, the body, the soul, just by being in community. And that's really, really what this is all about.
That's a good point. The point is that it is physiological. It's not just conceptual, and it's biological. Mm-hmm. So, and that's true about just connection. I'm always on a rant. I don't know. It seems like every show now I have an opportunity to say this. So people are probably getting tired of hearing me say it, but the virtual world that we're all living in right now, it to me is just so, it's disheartening, because as powerful as the technology is that allows connection, i.e. you and I would not be having this podcast right now were it not for that kind of technology. And so, right, as great as it is, though, it is eating into human connection in my experience. And I'm solid on this in my head. We're losing the human touch and the human connection. I hear it in the workplace. I hear it among my coachees, both CEOs and other leaders. And you talk about this loneliness piece. This is adding to it. I mean, how many people are now, you know, they're in leadership roles, but they're not even in. You talk about facility. The facility is virtual now for so many. And how do you have those kinds of connections, community? Really, really hard to do, much harder to do. There are some tools and techniques, but I just think it contributes to the loneliness. What do you think? You don't have to agree with me, but that's just what I'm seeing and feeling.
Well, because I'm talking to a PhD, I might wax a little nerdy. I think that the Industrial Revolution, the information age, the digital revolution as it is right now, COVID, helped to accelerate symptoms of anxiety that were resident in professionals before 2020.
Now, I've heard others say that. That makes some sense.
I think we were living in a fragmented society. And some of that was because of smartphones, or really, to me, one of the underlying philosophies of American capitalism or the American culture with regards to hyper-individualism. And so we live in a me culture. Me, 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 me culture. And I culture, right?
Absolutely.
What does the I stand for on many of our digital devices? Is it intelligence or is it individual? Like, you, what does that I on iPhone stand for? Could it be a little bit of both? So in that type of atmosphere and environment, it is going to breed certain things of isolation, withdrawal, and a pulling back. And then, you know, technology helps to facilitate things. So there's a different type of interaction that goes on in the virtual space that may not go on if we were face to face. And I'm particularly talking about more combative exchanges.
Yes.
People have been more emboldened to critique and those things don't really help to build strong relationship. And I think COVID just exaggerated that because it took away in person for a period of time to where some, and see now, Patrick, you got me out here now.
That's what you're here for.
Some businesses are going to appreciate virtual because it makes them lean.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So they can cut some overhead, and because the chief end of a business to some is profitability. So it makes them more profitable if I can cut down some of the overhead from facilities and all the other stuff that comes with having people in the office. And now they have people coming back to the office, but it's not for community reasons. Many of them is for performance. And so we're still not thinking about the human being as a social being.
Totally true.
We're thinking about them a little bit differently. And so, yes, technology had its hand in it, but I think technology was also helped by other elements and ingredients that created a certain kind of atmosphere and chemistry for people to really feel more lonely now than they ever have.
I think what you're saying, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. I think what you're saying is the technology around being able to connect virtually didn't create this thing. It illuminated it. It amplified it. It was already there, and this gave it space to rid. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just it accelerated it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. It was already there.
And that's a powerful thing to pause on for a second, because like I said, I've heard that before. And with regard to some other things as well, the toxicity and all that. But it's important to think about this for a second, because if we want to fix it, if as leaders we want to create more connectivity and community and you know, emotional intelligence and all of those things, if technology didn't create that, then minimizing technology use is not necessarily going to be the solution to it. There still has to be an intentional emotional approach, empathy approach. What was it? Someone, I was in a conference. This was probably 15 years ago. I was in a conference room and the keynote speaker told us to all, he said, look, I'm not asking you to turn your phones off. I'm not asking you to, you know, not bring them in here. But just for the sake of this meeting, do me a favor and play along. Put your phones and your laptops where they can't be seen. Just put them in your purse, your pocket, put your notebook on top of your phone. And if you can't do any of that, just flip your phone over where the screen is facing the table. And so we all, you know, played along. And then he went through, and I don't remember all the research, but I remember it being very compelling and hard hitting. The research about college students whose empathy markers, measurable empathy markers, dropped exponentially whenever there was just, get this, the presence of a screen of any kind. An LCD screen on the wall, a phone, an iPad, a smartwatch. That the presence of a screen dramatically decreases empathy markers. And so what is it, Anthony, if it's not the screen itself, right? If it's not the technology that's creating that inability to exercise strong emotional intelligence, then what is it? How do we I'm not saying you have to have the answer to this. I'm somewhat just asking it for myself out and putting it out there. How do we overcome it? What do we apply toward getting greater connection? I think part of your solution, it sounds like, is build community intentionally.
Yes. Yes. To build community intentionally and to build community so that the connection is the end, right? All the other things that come as a result of that are benefits of that connection. Mm-hmm. Being able to perform better at work is a benefit of this connection. It's not the point of the connection. This is what I think is the difference between community and networking. These phones are connected by a network, and in business, whether you're in the social sector or you're in the for-profit sector, the public sector, faith-based sector, you're taught to network, right? When networking has the opportunity, I'm not going to indict networking, but I will say there's an opportunity within a network to be a little utilitarian. But community can only be built if somebody is vulnerable. So community requires a vulnerability. Networking is going to suggest a certain amount of utility. And I think in the business space, you can have people who are great networkers who still feel lonely because they've got the utility, but they don't have community they don't have the space to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And in being intentional about that and understanding that we are human. I think if we were, and I think this is important, especially for leaders and those of us who work in a leadership space, if you want to get into motivation theory and goal theory and all the rest of that stuff, you're asking those questions of a human being. So at the end of the day, what does the human being want? And this is where we might get into some real tricky space, is what they want good for them? Right? Asking those types of questions.
And who decides that?
Exactly.
Yeah, man, this is good. Exactly. Okay, I'm going to call you Dr. Dix, whether or not you have a doctorate. I don't even care anymore. This is rich, rich stuff. I don't want to just blow past it. I want to pause on it because, man, the first time you said it's the end and not the means, I kind of wasn't quite sure exactly what you were talking about. Second time you said it, it landed. It totally landed that one is the byproduct of the other. So, you know, connection is not the way that we create great organizations. Great organizations lead mm-hmm. to connection. and the connection mm-hmm. is the benefit, and connection is the sort of end goal there. Other things will happen that are good as byproducts.
Right.
So good.
Right.
I love it.
Right.
Can we talk a little bit about what tips you have or what practices you found to be effective in, I'm going to use the word loneliness again, which by the way is a theme lately. I've got another guest coming in a few weeks who literally wrote the book Executive Loneliness. And we're going to talk more about this. Yeah. We're going to talk more about this topic. But
I bought that book yesterday.
Did you really?
Yes.
Did you buy it?
I almost did. There was a Kindle version when I looked at it. I can't remember the author's name.
But Nick Johnson.
The cover had him standing. Yeah. Had him standing on the cover. Yeah.
So, he's upcoming. But the theme is there, and this is why I'm talking about it a good bit on the show. Ron Harvey was just on our last episode, and we talked about it with him. But I'm going to add some words in here. And then I'm going to ask you for some what comes to mind as some practices that leaders can apply. Loneliness can come stress and even burnout. Mm-hmm. Loss of vision for the organization, for themselves, loss of energy. Loss of purpose. Mm-hmm. All this comes with this loneliness. So combining all of those together, what are some of the practices you're finding either that you've applied for yourself at times or that you're coaching leaders effectively on to combat that?
A few things here. Number one, this is high on my priority list, is intentionality. The leader has to have the initiative to seek out community. Because without that initiative, it will be difficult to build community to combat some of that loneliness. There are people who are lonely, know they're lonely, and like it. There are others who are lonely, know they're lonely, don't like it, but may not know what to do next. The people who can recover from leadership loneliness are those who are lonely, know they're lonely, and want to do something about it. So once you get to that space where you're seeking community, then that's the first step to recovery. That's the first step to recovery.
Okay, quick pause. And I want you to lose track here on the second step. Okay. But can a leader be lonely and not know it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I'll hear people talk about, you know, the struggles and, man, I'm just frustrated. And my board won't do this and I this, that, and the other. And they're getting this burnout and you start asking them, who do you connect with? You know, who do you have? Who are your confidants? Who are your, and they're like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. that's the problem. And they didn't know it. So I just wanted to kind of throw that potential third category in of leaders who are lonely, but don't know it. That's more dangerous.
And this is the benefit that you give them, right? They were talking to you.
Right. That's right. And they did seek you that know? With intentionality. That's a good connection.
Exactly. So if you seek a coach, can be a guide into community. But seeking that kind of help is a necessity, because you can't coach someone, you can't help someone who doesn't recognize that they have a challenge. You may be able to help them hone in as to what that challenge may be. But if they are lonely and know it, don't care, or they are lonely and don't know it, but are still seeking other things. They know the symptoms. This is how I feel, and I'm going to this particular person based on how I feel. Or if they're lonely, they know it's loneliness. That's a key. You gotta seek that help. That's
well, important. And you're giving agency when you say that, because it's not just sitting and saying, oh, man, I'm waiting for, no one will come to me. No one will come to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, they won't. Right. You know, you gotta go out there.
Leaders are at their best when they are active as opposed to passive.
100% agree.
Loneliness can put you in a posture where you feel like a victim.
That's right. Good. Yep.
And there's certain aspects of leadership that are, I mean, prone to a certain type of victimization. There's a certain kind of leadership where there's certain things you do have to take. Right. It's not all you win everything. There's some things you do take. Sometimes the board doesn't go forward with your agenda. Sometimes there are other political entities, agendas, and operations that are actively going for your demise. Sometimes there is some interpersonal challenges on the staff where you're not getting the performance that you would get out of another person if they only liked you. Like, there are some things that are challenging in leadership, but leadership maintain a posture of agency, as you said, and exercise that agency so that they don't get caught in the trap of divulging, or really devolving is a better word, devolving from lonely or alone to lonely to victim. Because if they get to that victim space, then it's very, very difficult to get out of there, because a victim is going to wait for a hero.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And that's that may not come to you.
On a related note, we talk about the difference a lot between accessibility and presence. A lot of leaders pride mm-hmm. themselves. I have an open door policy, right? You can come to me anytime. Well,
right.
If you have an open door, you know, you can walk through it both ways. Why don't you walk out your door and go to them mm-hmm. and you know, and seek that out. So, all right.
I walk the halls, man.
Yeah. Keep going with your steps though, because that is, I just had to pause on that. That's a step one. We just made a show right there. That was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know how it goes, Patrick. It takes one to know one. We know leadership loneliness because we've experienced it.
Yes, we have.
And getting out of it was definitely a process. And that process started with the agent, the one who feels lonely, saying, you know, I feel this way. Mm. I don't want to feel this way. I want to feel different. So moving towards growing out of it, because there's just some challenges that come along with leadership to where you may wrestle with leadership loneliness for the duration of your tenure as a leader. The second thing that I would say, and this is kind of, it's an analogy. This is not a recipe, but these are just, you know, thoughts that I have had and that may be helpful. So being intentional is number one. And maybe I'll do it this way. Not that this is second in order, but this is something that you can do, is develop a friends list. Mm. Develop a friends list, right? Leaders, if you're under the sound of my voice, you're a leader, you are an intentional person. You got to where you are by intent, by strategy. So you are intentional about those things. You can't build community without intent. So develop your friends list. Know what you think a good professional friend looks like, right? What is your quote unquote friend type professionally? Do they have to have, in order for you to connect in community, do the other people in your community, your friend list, do they have to have the same amount of responsibility in their organization as you do? Is there a certain revenue requirement? Because Patrick, you know as well as I do, like there's some people that leaders, we cut off our ear to them if they don't meet certain requirements. Like you got to have a business that is generating this kind of revenue or have a staff in this kind of, because especially when you're lonely, you feel as if your particular situation is different. There's nobody else that serves an organization like yours, that there's nobody dealing with a situation quite like yours. Well, if you want to get out of that leadership loneliness space, develop a friends list. Write down those characteristics. If I'm going to connect with a person professionally, they have to be an executive director like I am. If I'm going to connect with a person professionally, they have to understand the dynamics of what it's like to be a leader nonprofit in South Carolina, right? Or in whatever state you may be in. Develop that friends list, and that'll help give you the picture of what you're actually looking for. Then you should run it by somebody to see if you're just looking for a unicorn or if you're looking for people that actually exist.
You know what that sounds like? We talk about building in marketing, they call it avatar. You know, who's our ideal client, or who's our ideal donor?
Exactly.
Why don't we do that with our friends? Who's my ideal friend? If I were to build an avatar, a profile of the kind of person I want to and need to connect to and with.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's good. Yep. That's good.
Because if you think about it, when you're in school, your friends are the people you went to school with normally, or the people you grew up around. Well, that's a pretty unintentional way. And I know what John Maxwell in 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, the first law he starts with is intentionality. And the analogy that he gives, intentionality, and the analogy that he gives is he said, basically, and it convicted me when I read it, you know, 0 to 20, you grow naturally. That's just what you're going to do. You don't have to work to grow. You just live and you're going to grow. Of course, there's nutrition, but you get this analogy. Once you are an adult, growth comes with intentionality.
That's good.
All right. And so you got to, and now that we are adult professionals, we just can't rely on the social networks that we gravitate to be the ones that benefit us the most. We have to exercise a little bit of intentionality, and that's important. So developing that friends list, developing that friend like avatar, both, since you use a marketing analogy, not just demographic, but psychographic.
Yeah.
Do they believe the same thing that I believe? And go from there.
And something else comes to mind as you say that. We are, I'll give you an example. The best way to do this. There are social media groups out, like Facebook groups out there for nonprofit leaders. They're miserable. I don't know if you've ever read through the threads of those Facebook groups. They're miserable, miserable, miserable. And it's misery loves company. And so the entire thread, almost all of it is, What do I do with this toxic employee? My board doesn't like me. My, you know, I'm that. I had so and so do such and such. I can't believe, you know, so and so. Everything from sexual harassment to, and then other people chime in, and some of them rudely, and some of them, you know, you know, oh, I share it. I had the same thing. You listen to this family, and it's like, okay, so we have a community. But is it a healthy community? Are we actually lifting each other, or are we wallowing together in our in our misery? And so aside to that is, you know, I was told as I, you know, moved into building my own business and doing these kinds of things, I was always told, become friends with people who are more successful than you, who you feel like are more advanced than you, who know more than you know, like build a network around you and a community and family around you of people that are going to lift you, not where you feel like you're the most important and you're the smartest person in the room. And that's how you lift yourself up. I just throw that out there. I'd love your, just like your initial reaction to that as it relates to the kind of community that you're talking, your friends list as you build it. Does that, I mean, am I off on something else right now? Or are you feeling like that would relate?
No, you lift up a significant wrinkle with community, that not all communities are healthy. And there is a tendency for misery to spread like a virus, like people who are just commiserating about the challenges within their particular line of work. And that's just not healthy, right? That's just not healthy. It's healthy to vent, but it may not always be healthy to vent in certain environments. You want to vent in a safe place where it can be recognized, valued, but also point you to a way in which you can make you better. You can make your organization better. And I think that is important as well. That is important as well, to make sure that the communities that you are seeking are not just communities for commiseration. This is one way that I think at it. Think about it. On your friends list, ask yourself, are these the characteristics of someone who's growing where I'm growing? Do we have the same purpose, or do we have the same pain and the same past? Because if we are only in relationship and gaining community because we share in misery and not in mission, that may not be the best. That may not be the best connection that you want to make. You want to make sure you are pursuing a thing, not necessarily avoiding a thing, as you move into community.
That's good. And that's a balancing act too, by the way, because you don't want to just surround yourself with people that are just like you. I mean, that's another part of it too, is how are we creating that shared sense of purpose, but with diverse backgrounds and thoughts and even, you know, goals and objectives and things, where we're different, but we're the same sort of thing. Right. Right. And I'm, by the way, I'm going to catch flack for that Facebook comment I made. So I'm going to back up because I want to clarify what I don't mean. I don't mean that the people in those Facebook groups are bad people. I don't mean to say that having a Facebook group where people can, you know, put out some challenges and get some good responses to things. What I am referring to is, in the groups that I've seen, there tends to be a lack of control on tone and energy in general. And it digresses, it sinks into negative energy if you're not careful. And then your community is, you know, it's doesn't have the kind of energy that's going to lift your loneliness. Lift you out of loneliness, if that's what I'm meaning to say. So I want to clarify that. I'm not criticizing either the group or the people in it. I just find that the conversations almost always center on the kinds of things that just lead to the problems and the barriers and the deficiencies. And it's like, let's talk about some energy and abundance and what's working and, you know, how can I support you and celebrate mm-hmm. with you and all of those things. Anyway, enough said about all that. Man, keep going. What do you got? Like 8 more points? I want to hear them all. This is, I'm learning from this. This, Anthony, seriously, this is good, great conversation.
The other, I guess it's advice, the thing I would suggest is to see leaders, to change the leadership paradigm, right? Leadership is like playing basketball. It's not like playing golf. So I would advise you to stop playing golf in the leadership game and start playing basketball. Golf, you are on the field. And I get you got a caddy, but it's just you. So you and your coach is not going to be enough for a community, right? You're going to need more than that. You're going to need people on the team with whom you share responsibility, right? And I think, and I'm just thinking out loud here, Patrick, here's one way to think about it. If I'm the executive director of an organization, I do have a community in that organization that is my responsibility. But I also have a responsibility as the executive director of the organization in the larger community. So there may be other organizations in my environment who are trying to reach the same goal we are trying to reach in regards to helping our community flourish and thrive. So see those others, see those colleagues as also members of your team upon which you can rely for advice, a listening ear, resources, being pointed in certain directions, the learning. That's what I mean by playing basketball, not playing golf. Don't approach your responsibility in any capacity as a leader as a lone ranger. That's my other analogy. See yourself as one of the Avengers. The Lone Ranger is a hero, just like any of the other Avengers are a hero. It's just that in one context, he did it all on himself, all by himself. But in another context, they won because they were a team. The Lone Ranger, I guarantee you, he wasn't fighting any enemy like Thor. Excuse me, like Thanos. If you've got problems like Thanos, you can't win being a Lone Ranger. You are going to need Iron Man, Black Widow, Captain America, the Black Panther. You're going to need them all. So see yourself as a part of a community of heroes, not just one hero, and that'll help move you towards getting out of that leadership loneliness. You got to change how you view leadership altogether.
That's good. That's good. Can I add up nuance to that?
Please. That's what we're here for.
When I think of, I love what you just said. You know, it's true. Even tennis is a solo sport. You're playing against one person, mm-hmm. but it's just you, unless you're playing doubles, right? But your analogy, I think works really well when you're talking about leadership. I almost think a little bit in reverse of your theory, though, when I think about just connection. If connection doesn't if I need to lay down the pressure of leadership for a moment and just connect with people, I go play golf. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like people go out mm-hmm. and play golf in a foursome or whatever. And everyone will say, this is the number one thing they say when you get on the golf course. As I know this because I'm a terrible golfer. And the moment I hit a bad shot, everyone says the exact same thing. They say, don't worry mm-hmm. about it. We're just out here for the fellowship. That's what golf is. Now, I've always struggled mm-hmm. with that because I'm a very competitive person. I'm like, no, that's not all golf. There's a point to this, if I'm not wrong. I think there's an mm-hmm. objective of, getting it in as few strokes as possible. And I want to get it, you know, I want to score better than you three. We can be best friends, but I'm still out here competing. And I finally learned it. I finally figured it out. And people who play casual golf, for example, they will say, hey, we're just out here literally for the connection. We're just getting out. It's 4 hours. It's a walk in the park, you know, swinging a stick around at a ball, but we're chatting about things. And maybe we're talking about work, but maybe not. And we're just kind of out here. When I think basketball, I think of a more competitive environment where you do have to, you have to play well with others. You have to lead others. There has to be a point guard, you know, what the floor general, they call them. From a leadership standpoint, I totally get that. I can also see the flip side of what the emotional connection feels like when you're playing basketball versus when you're playing golf. I don't know. That's just a slight nuance to me. And I think your analogy, you put it in the leadership framework, and I think it's spot on.
And in your nuance, there are times where leaders need to clear their head, right? There are times where you can go, quote unquote, play golf, and it's about the fellowship, right? And you're in a competitive environment with friends, and you are therefore the connection. And in the leadership context, that there's a possibility for that to also be a part of a helpful framework to build community as well, because it's all about how you see yourself amongst others, right? Yep. The way the golf game is structured is kind of singular. The way the basketball game is structured is a more team sport.
Yep.
But if you take a team mindset onto the golf course, then that works too.
Mm.
Because that's really where the shift is. It's the paradigm. So don't see yourself as a singular athlete trying to win the trophy on your own. See yourself as a part of the team on the PGA Tour to win. I don't know what cup it is.
The Ryder Cup. There you go.
The Ryder Cup. See yourself in that way.
Yeah, that's good.
And you can still play golf and just doing it with a team mindset, because that long range of stuff is easy to get there.
Yeah, it is.
It is easy to get to. Nobody knows what it's like. You're not in these. I mean, it is easy, so very easy to get there. But keep that team mindset, and that'll definitely help.
That's good. The other thing that makes me think of is, you know, our list of friends, they don't necessarily have to be, and maybe they shouldn't be, all professional friend. Like, I want, you know, my friendship is a collegial professional network. We need regular old friends too, right? You know, people we go out and, you know, go mountain biking with, or people like people need friends that aren't in that same arena that you're in. So it's an escape, but I don't think it's the kind of community you're the kind of community I think you're talking about that is really missing for leaders, is where there is that common thread, that kindred spirit, so to speak. There's an affinity there.
Mm-hmm. Because there are things leaders in their organizations, and at this point I'm talking about, you know, those who are the senior most leader in their organization, don't have peers in their organization.
That's right.
And the work that they do can make them so insular, because, you know, this, you know, organizations are idiosyncratic. So there's no other organization like yours, particularly because there's no other, your set of employees, your set of staff, they don't work for anybody else. They're working with you. And that type of responsibility, what it can give way to is that kind of loneliness that nobody knows what it's like to be me. Nobody really understands, and you know how it is. Nobody understands. You understand in general, but you don't understand the nuances. You don't understand the personalities. And being in a context or a community where there are other people who have those same challenges, but in distinct institutions, and being able to listen to them, how they're navigating, can help to alleviate some of the cortisol that anxiety produces, so that you can have a better time when you are out on that mountain bike, when you are out playing with your friends so that you can actually have a more enjoyable, meaningful, and thriving life.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's what we intend to do.
What else? Did you have another? Was there another one that I cut you off on?
Yeah, no.
I feel bad. I derail you sometimes.
No, you're not derailed. No, this is a conversation. That's how conversations
go. It's good.
The other part is you got to find a way to get the weight off you.
Mm.
Right? You got to find a way to get the weight off of you. And for that, you need a spotter.
Say more about that.
Now this is where your friends list will help you. On your friends list, you need to have at least one friend upon whom you can rely to take some of this weight off of you. In order to take the weight off of you, you need to have a friend or a colleague, a professional friend. And I like to use those adjectives to kind of qualify the type of friendship.
Yeah.
Who understands the kind of weight that you're under. Right. Just like if you were going to the gym,
yep.
If you're getting ready to lift a heavy weight, you don't want to lift it without some help around. So you need a spotter. You need a spotter who you trust. And that spotter is not helping you blindly. They see how much weight you just put on there. They see how much weight you're under. And so you need someone who knows the type of weight that you're under and who you trust has the strength to help you get it off, to help you rack it. So who can you distribute some of your weight to? Now, this person may or may not be internal to your organization. I don't really have all the answers in that regard, but you do need someone who understands the kind of weight you're under, and you can, at moments, in conversation with them, in interactions with them, get some of this weight off of you. I think that's what's going on in some of those Facebook groups that you mentioned, that they don't have another place to vent their frustration because they're human, right? You can't always, but we can't assume that people are going to have meetings that can be a little tenuous, or because they are so passionate about the work that they do and they see certain decisions that may be made that they can't control that are impeding their ability to get certain things done, that it doesn't affect them. And after a while, it builds and builds and builds. And that's another part of this weight. I've got feelings I want to express, but I can't express them. I've got responsibility that I don't want to carry, but I have to carry it, grin, smile, keep going, look resilient, and keep moving that way. And you wear that long enough, it can wear on you. And so you need to get those things off of you. You need a safe place to do that. And you need someone you trust who will lift that up off of you and not judge you for not being able to handle it.
That was a pretty powerful end statement right there. That's a conditional set right there, and I love it. Someone who won't judge you for it. So I'm hearing all this. Someone with whom you can share the weight, so distribute the weight. Someone who won't let you fail, or at least not in the way of doing damage to yourself. That's a spotter.
Yep.
And someone who won't judge you, you know, because you know you can't lift 200 pounds. You could lift 190, but you can't lift the 200. They're not going to judge you for that.
Right.
Here's what I find in my coaching work. I use a model. I don't know where it came from. My dad used to always say, control what you can, roll with the rest. But there's a model that's a little bit deeper than that called CIA. And the C is, what are the things about this challenge or initiative or body of work that you completely control? That's the C. What do you control?
Okay.
Your hands are on the knobs and levers. You can unilaterally change something. You got full control. The I is influence. I can't unilaterally control it, but I can artfully apply influence that increases the chance of success. And then the A is, I can't control it. I can't influence this. I have to accept it. Or if you don't like that word, that sounds resigning to some. Okay, then adapt. There's another A word. I have to adapt to it, not control it or influence it. And what we say in the leadership coaching is leaders make two kinds of mistakes in this model. They either accept things that they could have controlled or influenced. It's like, oh, well, I just can't do anything about it because so-and-so or my board, this, my staff, you know, this is, you know, the grant runs out, you know, I'm out. And they accept things that they could have controlled or influenced a different outcome. But the other mistake, equal or more in this weight that you're talking about, is we beat our heads against a wall and continuously try to control or influence things that we can't. And we should just move them to the A column. And when we move them to the A column, it's liberating. And I find leaders carrying stuff around that's not theirs to carry. Like I ask, one of the questions I ask a lot in my coaching is, why are you carrying that? And there's silence and there's, you know, sometimes tears. It's like, cause no one else is going to, okay, but where's it get? What's the end game here? What are your intentions around it? What can you really do about it? Nothing. Yeah. Well, then why are you carrying it? So some of it is not distributing the weight. Some of it is just drop it. It's not important. Yep. It's not, but it's really weighing us down. Even some small things that when they say it out loud, they go, man, yeah, I'm putting a lot of, I'm losing sleep over that. Yeah, you are. Cause you're carrying it and it's not yours to carry. So yeah.
That's good.
I love I love that weight one. Man, all right, you're going to have to become one of my repeat guests, Anthony. This is because these are the kinds of conversations I think we need to have. This is it. These are the conversations we need to be having. And yes, we still need to have the fundraising conversation, and we still need to have the good financial management conversation, and we still need to have the career conversations and any of that stuff. But we gotta get down to, hey, are we taking care of our souls here? Are we taking care of our... Like if we're not growing, thriving, being fulfilled, living optimal lives, we can't serve a mission, not effectively. So this is so good.
Yeah.
Anthony, before we're kind of out of time. Before we wrap up though, there are two questions that I like to ask all my guests at the end of the show.
Okay.
So,
you say these for the end. I know I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Now.
So here they are. Question one. I love hearing stories about the leaders in people's lives who have had the greatest impact on them and why. Those stories inspire me and they help people center themselves on, you know, who inspires me. One of the reasons I like to hear that is, okay, well, who am I inspiring? So I'd love to hear about who comes to mind. If I were to ask you about a leader in your life that you would say has had profound, it doesn't have to be the most influence, but has had profound influence on your success, on your leadership point of view, your philosophy, any of that, who comes to mind and why?
You know, it's hard for me to name one person. But one person who I've had the opportunity to see kind of up close and personal, you'll get it after I say who it is Anthony A. Dix Sr. My dad.
Yep.
My daddy has been a pastor since I've been alive. And he's also been a funeral director since I've been alive. And I've watched him not only navigate spaces in the church, but also in the community and in business. And he's one leader that I've got to see lead for 47 years. Because that's how old I am, right? And I know now you got my mind rolling. I know we talk about some intergenerational conflict when it comes to succession planning and leadership and all the rest of that stuff for preparing the next generation. I've just had the fortunate opportunity, at least in that context, to see my dad's leadership evolve over time and see a person at his age, he's 40, excuse me, he's 68, I believe. Yeah. What, yeah, he'll be 68 this year, 69 this year. To have conversations with him about what's next for him, and there is a next professionally. So he's still trying to climb a mountain. But at the same time, he's trying to pass a baton. And so being able to see that up close and how he's navigating through those things has just been, I am learning so, so much. And also how much he invests in the next generation. Man, listen, that has been at this stage of my life, so influential to kind of see, you know, some things that I may want to continue when I reach where he is, at least in age. That's my pop, man. I got to see that.
That's the ultimate apprenticeship right there. Is the ultimate apprenticeship.
Oh yeah.
I got an image. You really gave a visual about your dad, you know, climbing the next mountain, but also reaching behind him, you know, handing the torch. That place in life. I mean, he's at a place in his life where there's a purpose to both ends of that spectrum. Yeah. That's really, really, really cool.
Man, listen. Yeah, but the way you just put that though, that is rich. Because what I saw was, you know, when they're training people to run in a relay, like there's a very precarious point where the baton is being passed, where one person knows my leg in the race is ending, your leg in the race is beginning. So I got to slow down the attitude I had when I started it. I got to start slowing down in order to give you enough space to pick this up.
But I'm still
and
running.
So just that, yeah, that ambition and still yet finishing all of that in one mind, and watching somebody live through that, wrestle with that. But it's just a blessing to see.
That's awesome. I reading some things by Robert Greene. Robert Greene, like him or not, the laws of mastery, the power laws, the daily laws, a prolific writer on these things, and they're amoral. So he writes these things to say, I'm not advocating for this being right or virtuous. I'm saying these are the laws that throughout history have shown themselves, you know, in various societies. And, but one of the things he talks about is that when we want to master something, we have to have, we have to have a mentor. And when we have that mentor, mentors, the people we're learning from, we have to walk into those environments like a child, not knowing anything. And we have to act like we don't know anything. And I'm here to just learn everything I can from you. Like you tell me, I'm just going to suck it up. Like you just tell me. And there will come a time. And as it turns out, it's around a 7 to 10 year period. There's research behind this, the 10,000 hour rule from, you know, that Malcolm Gladwell and these things. Yeah. So, but there's this sort of 7 to 10 year time frame where you do reach a point of, I've mastered something. Not that there's nothing more to learn, but that I've mastered something. And that when that happens, then I become the mentor. As I was reading that one, it dawned on me, it was an indictment on me, because I did it in reverse. I was so arrogant. I was such a know-it-all. I'd walk into rooms and just, you know, young, you know, in 20s and 30s. I'm smart. I already know that. You got it wrong. It was horrible. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't realize it at the time. I didn't think I was a know-it-all. Looking back on it, though, I realize I didn't approach my learning early on from that standpoint. Now, I feel like I've reached a level of, I don't know about mastery, but certainly proficiency, you know, in the area of the things that I do, training, speaking, coaching, those things. But now my appetite for learning has exploded. Like I want to, you know, now I wish I could go back and like listen to these people that I didn't listen to before. And so I'm finding myself, and you said you were 47, did you say? Yep. So I'm 10 years ahead of you and I'm going, man, I still have time to learn and I'm learning now. Mm-hmm. Now I'm really in learning mode. And they say, if you want to learn, teach. So now I'm pushing myself in the teaching realm to not just teach what I already know, but learn and mm-hmm. teach as I learn. This just becomes such a powerful thing. So to hear you tell about your father in that way and the learning you're getting from watching and then putting your hand on the baton for that experiential learning, because that's the way we learn the most, and following mm-hmm. in those footsteps the way that you are, that's exciting. Last question. You're on a mountaintop with a megaphone and all the leaders of the world are within earshot listening to Anthony Dix Jr. With your with your 20 seconds, what do you tell them? What's your number one message for all leaders in the world that if you were to tell them one thing, what would you tell them?
You've got what it takes.
Mm.
That's the one thing that I would tell them. Wow. You've got what it takes. I think leaders wrestle a lot with feelings of inadequacy. And many have learned that accomplishment doesn't take that away from you. But you can have a lot of things on your resume. You still feel like, it's still not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. It's not enough. And those who are listening to me, if they've been coached by me, they probably say that he is very consistent, because that's probably what they feel in sessions that they've been in with me, and what they feel if I've had an opportunity to be a keynote or some type of breakout instructor or something like that. Then my message is real simple. You've got what it takes. And anything you feel like you don't have, you got enough learning capacity to gain it. You've got what it takes. You got what it takes to get it done.
I got to chime in on that one too, because we do assessments, and one of the assessments we do is emotional intelligence. And one of the aspects of emotional intelligence that gets measured is self appreciation. Which includes mm-hmm. self-confidence and self-worth. But self-appreciation is the dimension. And I would tell you that if I were to go and look at all the assessments that we've done, that one area consistently scores lower than all the other ones. I see mm-hmm. it all the time in executive leadership. Great with empathy and listening and developing and project, but the self-appreciation tends to score lower in those areas. So I think there's research behind that. And, you and I, and many of our listeners, have a mutual friend by the name of Charles Weathers, who his keynote I heard years ago was, "You're enough. You're mm-hmm. enough." And it was power. It was a great reminder that you're enough. It doesn't mean you're perfect.
Yep.
But it means you're enough. You've got that. Look, go do it. You've got that value. So, man, I love that. Anthony, we could go on and on and on. I'm definitely going to have you back if you're willing to come back on and do this again with me. Because these are the things. These are the moments. I love it. And I appreciate it. Greater connection with you now.
I don't know why
it took so long.
Thank you.
For us to do this.
Yeah, man. Matter of fact, I thought about you last week. I was in St. Louis. Yeah, we were working with a client in St. Louis, and a part of my presentation, I got a chance to talk about Ozzie Smith, and I thought about the cap you had on when we were down in Charleston last year. And I said, man, I wanted me a hat so bad. I didn't walk away. I'll be back in St. Louis next week. But I said, you know what? I might want to pick up me a Cardinals hat, because that's a beautiful city, man. That's a wonderful.
It's a really cool city. Yeah, I have a niece that just moved there, and we go every year now for a couple of Cardinals games. So we're going in August. We're going to go see him play the Dodgers, because we want to see Shohei Ohtani and all that. So we don't know if we're going. We don't know what our chances are against them, but yeah, we're going in August. Looking forward to that. Anthony, thank you again. Let's do it again. And man, all the best to you. Continued success. And I get up to Maryland every once in a while. I got a lot of clients in Frederick, actually. and a couple in Annapolis as well. So when I'm up that way, we need to connect. And when you're back down here,
yeah, man,
let's do the same. Are you coming to the Together SC Summit, by the way, by any chance?
I'll be there next week.
You are going to be there?
I'll be there.
Awesome.
Yep, I'll be there.
Good, I will too. So let's connect. Make sure we connect up there.
Cool.
All right, folks, play this back. Listen to it again. Take notes. This is good stuff. Lead on. Okay, I'm going to go back and edit.